Join the Colorado Ag News Network and Farmcast Radio by telephone once again is Colorado Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg. We'll be discussing several topics, and believe me, the list is long but distinguished. Of course, issues pertinent to ag producers across the state. First off, welcome back inside the barn, Commissioner Greenberg.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be back.
I know you've been extremely busy, and I just got back from Pueblo, but the 2020 Colorado State Fair continues through Labor Day. Kind of recap the first week and give reaction thus far, and then we'll talk about what's coming up the rest of this weekend and Labor Day weekend.
Well, I think you know probably better than most how it went. You were running all around, making sure everybody who was not at the fair this year and tuning in could see the shows and competitions. And, of course, I think everyone knows that our core mission as a fair board was to preserve the 4-H and FFA events this year, even if we had to be closed to the public, which, you know, we were. But there was a lot going on. I was down there for opening day on Friday, came back Monday and Tuesday of this week for junior livestock auction on Tuesday. We had families from all over the state doing what they do, coming to show, bringing their animals, showing the hard work that the kids have put in for just so many months leading up to this, you know, this one day or this one week. And so that part of the fair felt very familiar, and it was bustling. Our team was just, you know, all over the place making sure everyone had what they need. The kids did such an amazing job just, you know, adapting to this year. We had drive-through fair food, which was the one non-ag public event on the fairgrounds, and we had, I believe, over 1,000 vehicles come through over the weekend. We've got four or five vendors there, you know, selling funnel cake and turkey legs and all the rest. And so, you know, at least a few thousand people got a taste of fair food on site, which is another goal. We wanted to make sure people stay connected to the fair, you know, especially if they come for events that aren't happening this year. So, you know, I think that's been a huge success. And then our virtual events are continuing through the rest of the week. And, you know, we've had cooking classes and kids' day camp and online competitions. And, again, not the same as folks are used to, but so proud of our team for just making a massive overhaul of how we do fair and keeping folks connected.
You bet. Going back to those junior market hog, goat, beef, and lamb shows and the championship drives, you can check out the webcast archives at livestream.com/barnmedia/2020CSF or just go to ColoradoStateFair.com. And then to the junior livestock sale, the Colorado Electric Cooperative's junior livestock sale, more than $298,200 was raised in the auction of just 98 animals this year because of the COVID situation. I was surprised, though. It seemed like all the entries for each one of the shows was up this year, which did surprise me. And, you know, the virtual state fair camps that the Colorado Foundation for Agriculture was a part of, that seems like that's a huge success, right?
It has been, yeah. I mean, it's true from what you're mentioning with the livestock auction and true with our kids' day camp. To get the technology up to a place and our internet, of course, up to a place where we can run these programs remotely, you know, was a huge deal. And for junior livestock, we did have, you know, a few dozen people in the audience in person. Some of the buying clubs were there, at least some members. The vast majority of folks were all around the state, you know, tuning in virtually, bidding virtually, maybe even around the country. And you know, that's been true for day camp and for other online experiences that our team's created. So, you know, that was, oh, man, just making sure that the internet's stable and, you know, you're not going to have a buffering situation where, you know, you've got the live auction going and folks at home miss part of it. Like, that, you know, that's been a big, I think, stress and weight on the team, and they've done such a good job in leaning on technology to, you know, keep people engaged this year.
You bet. Huge thanks to LiveAuctions.tv for webcasts and the online auction that took place during the junior livestock sale. You can check out the webcast archive of the sale online at livestream.com/barnmedia/2020CSF or ColoradoStateFair.com. This year, the junior market livestock shows were all dedicated to the memory of Mick Livingston and Jared Samber. Just want to say thoughts and prayers continue to go out to those the families there. Now, coming up this week, because it continues through Labor Day, it's junior horse shows are going on right now.
That's right. Yep, that's happening this week. We've got a few other events coming up. The slopper eating contest, which I have to say was not just a statewide but a national hit. I guess folks love competitive eating, and that's happening on Saturday. We actually got I think one of the biggest champions out there who is coming to Pueblo for the contest. So, you know, there's plenty more taking place. There's actually another round of drive-through fair food this weekend. So if you haven't had a chance to come down to Pueblo yet, it's also a really good excuse to go to Pueblo and just, you know, spend a couple nights, help support the economy, shop at local restaurants, stay at local hotels, and then go get your funnel cake, you know, and at least get on the fairgrounds this year. We've obviously, the fair has a huge economic impact on Pueblo and Southern Colorado, and not hosting it this year, you know, a lot of the local businesses feel that. So certainly encouraging folks to think about Pueblo as a vacation spot. You know, travel to safely, but enjoy the food and the weather and the beauty of Southern Colorado.
You know, once again, the 2020 Colorado State Fair is going on right now through Labor Day in Pueblo. For a complete schedule and more information about the events yet to come, and even links to the live and archive webcasts, go to ColoradoStateFair.com. Want to shift our attention. Usually during the normal year at State Fair, we're recognizing the History of Colorado Centennial Farms and Ranches recipients, but they were actually recognized virtually online on September 2nd. Anything you wanted to mention about those folks that were able to be accepted this year into the class of 2020, as it were?
Well, you know, I think that History Colorado put on such a lovely event. Again, it was not as we're used to, nor as we would want it to be, but we were able to recognize over 20 families who have hit that centennial mark. And, you know, so much of this is recognizing what it takes to keep, not only keep land and agriculture for that long, but keep it in the family. And, you know, Colorado has an incredible history and legacy of that, from the earliest agriculture in the state all the way through now. And so we got a chance to recognize that, recognize the families. History Colorado read short bios of each of the families, which really personal anecdotes, which kind of gave you a feel of what it took for these families, especially in the early days, to get to where they are. So glad that the team over at History Colorado was able to pull it off in the end. I think we were uncertain if and how it was going to happen, but they made it happen in the end, and really grateful that we had a brief moment last night, a few minutes, to recognize these families around the state.
So the class of 2020, I'll go through this list quickly, include Barkley Farm, B.A. Johnson & Sons, Blend Farm, Harris Homestead, John Bull Farm, Michael Farm, Dixon Ranch, Shook Kyle Farm, Warner Ranch, Bollinger Family Farm, Carper Farm, Sunfire Ranch, Lauren James and Joe Ellen Herman Revocable Trust, Woodward Brandenburg Farm, Bernhardt Farms LLC, Vernon Carolyn Camerzell Farm, Lepsack or Dirks Farms, Spady Ranch, Young Brothers Place, and the Showers Ranch. You can check out the complete list and the counties they're from, and watch the video archive of the 2020 Colorado Centennial Farms and Ranches recipients online inside the barn, or go to ColoradoStateFair.com. You can learn more about the History of Colorado Centennial Farm and Ranches program at historycolorado.org/centennial-farms-ranches. I also understand, Kate, that the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture's Board of Directors just adopted a new strategic plan to guide the association that you're a member of, being a commissioner from Colorado, for the years 2020 through 2025 this past week.
That's right, Brian. And so this week is the annual meeting for our National Association of State Departments of Ag. This may not be on anybody's radar, you know, and that's okay, but there's actually a lot of meaningful and important work that's getting done across all 50 states. This organization, our national association, we as commissioners of agriculture are the members, and we drive the staff to advocate for what we want them to advocate for in D.C. So this is where a lot of our sort of federal leverage comes through as state agencies. A big chunk of our strategic plan and sort of visioning for the years ahead, especially this year, is around rural resilience and revitalization. That's been, you know, a conversation we've been having for a long time and been a clear focus of the organization for a while as well, but especially this last year and now moving into this one, just knowing the impact of the economy, of COVID, of, you know, the weather and the environment and all of the stacked, you know, challenges that ag faces, in particular what those challenges look like in rural places. We as a, you know, as a coalition of commissioners and ag secretaries are really focused on that with the new strategic plan. So we've been moving through our committee meetings this week. You know, we've got about six committees, I believe, you know, animals and livestock committee, natural resources, food systems and nutrition, rural economic development. You know, we passed a number of policies yesterday that Colorado has been working on, one of which was in support of competitiveness in meat processing and really looking at support for small and mid-scale independent producers in rural places around the country. We have supported policies around making sure, you know, that we are getting broadband out across rural America. That's been a core focus of ours. Really important and meaningful action and discussions around inclusion and equity and making sure we're building, continuing to build a community where everyone is welcome and able to be a part of agriculture. And then, you know, really thinking about next Farm Bill. I think that's very much on our minds. You know, these five-year Farm Bill cycles, you finish one and you pretty much get started on the next, and now we're about halfway through. And so I think sights are starting to get set on what 2023, what we want to see in that next, you know, 2023 Farm Bill.
So you mentioned all the committees. Do you have to serve on each one, or which ones are you on this year?
So I serve on three. They're concurrent. So I serve on as many as I can attend without cloning myself. I am on Rural Economic Development, I'm on Natural Resources, and I'm on Food Systems and Nutrition. And then I've got Dr. Rohr, who is attending the Animal Health and Livestock. I have our Wandra Gebru, who is our Plants Industry Division Director, attending Plant Health Committee. And then there's one other that I am forgetting.
That's okay.
It's marketing. It's international marketing. Tom Lopetsky was on that meeting yesterday. No action items, but just a lot of recap from China trade and what we're anticipating and some other guest speakers. So we're dividing and conquering on this one because there's a lot going on.
Oh, you bet. By the way, NASDA's new mission statement is grow and enhance American agriculture through policy, partnerships, and public engagement. And their new vision statement is agriculture leads the way towards a healthy and resilient world. You can learn more about the National Associated State Department of Agriculture by visiting NASDA.org. That's NASDA.org. You mentioned Tom Lopetsky in marketing. We can't forget last month, Colorado Proud Month. That was a pretty big success too, right? Even though a lot of it was done virtually.
That's right. It was a big success. And, you know, I think Colorado Proud has really helped carry a lot of water through COVID. It's been a place where we can kind of put our energy and positive energy at that, right? We're really utilizing the brand recognition with Colorado Proud to drive promotional opportunities for producers, drive to consumers to local markets, and really expanding as much as we can market opportunities across Colorado through that program. So, yeah, August was big. Our team, especially Wendy White, is kind of, it's a one-woman team on the whole. She pulls the weight here. Has been busy with a lot of online events, connecting folks virtually. Of course, we've got ColoradoProud.com, where we're promoting local businesses that sell Colorado ag products and really trying to drive consumers there, too. So, you know, that typically lines up with the start of school. And, of course, who knows what the start of school really is going to look like. It looks different already for different people. It looks different day to day. And, you know, I think that's just the theme of 2020. And we just kind of roll with it. And Colorado Proud's certainly been rolling with it this year and making some really good things happen.
My guest once again is Colorado Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg. You mentioned just a little while ago about the recent NASDA Livestock Committee meeting where they adopted policy to support meat processing. Of course, in the news the last month or so, JBS Mountain States Rosen lamb plant situation. What is the latest on that?
Well, we know that, so I believe we've crossed over the 30-day stay, or we're right around that point. Rosen, as I think probably most listeners know, was the processor for not just Colorado producers, but multi-state, you know, states all around the West and even Midwest. So without that plant, you know, it's left a lot of producers in a lurch. Certainly the brush facility that's coming online is likely coming online at a good time, but it will not, you know, capture all the lost capacity from Rosen. So, you know, I know folks have been looking at what is out there. I mean, some are having to look abroad, you know, to Mexico. We've got the Texas plant we were talking about earlier that's coming online that might alleviate some of the backup in the system. But it's, you know, it's, it's concerning in its own right, but when you put it in context with just sort of the backup that all livestock producers are facing right now and that bottleneck of processing, I mean, it's not just from when the plants were shut down from COVID, right? And it's also this change in demand and change in where consumers are getting their food, and consumers can change where they buy food overnight, right? You can eat every meal at a restaurant, and when restaurants shut down the next day, you buy all your meals at the grocery store, right? It's real easy, but for the food supply chain to make that kind of pivot just has ripple effects throughout time. And I think, you know, we're seeing that now. A lot of our cattle producers, you know, I'm hearing that a lot of our processors are backed up 12 months. There's some who aren't even booking right now. They're so backed up. So it's something we're seeing across the board. Certainly the Rosen closure has added to the ripple effect of the impact of supply chain that we're seeing this year. I know a lot of producers are scrambling, trying to figure out what's next. Hopefully the Texas plan, hopefully Brush might alleviate some of that. I don't think they're going to solve the problem, so I think we've got some bigger questions to ask and answer as we move ahead.
You can learn more about the Colorado Lamb Processors plant in Brush online at cololamb.com, and I hope it's up and online and operational soon if it's not already. As a side note, you mentioned the Texas lamb plant. Livestock Weekly last week reported that the Colorado Lamb feeder purchased the Texas lamb plant and will open ASAP. Of course, that's Double J Lamb of Texas purchasing the Old Ranchers Lamb of Texas plant in San Angelo, Texas. And the new owners, of course, are the Hasbrook family of Alt, Colorado, and Double J Meatpacking, owned by the Hasbrook family of Colorado and managed by Kelly Hasbrook Kreiner. Word of the sale began leaking out late last week. They're not new to lamb processing and even the meatpacking industry. You can learn more about them. You know, right now, the Hasbrooks own and operate Double J Lamb Feeders at Alt. Jeff and his sister operate Double J Meatpacking Company in Pierce, and they process 150 cattle and buffalo a day. So, pretty interesting story and a great news story for Colorado once again. Wanted to ask you about the community-based health support for agriculture workers, not only working in the meatpacking plants, but also the fruit and vegetable industry and dairies and feedlots. Anything you wanted to mention there?
Well, this has, you know, been, of course, a focal point for COVID response since the get-go. I think we've talked before that, you know, as a critical business, thank goodness ag has been in business this whole time, and with that comes, you know, a lot of responsibility to keep people safe and keep our workforce safe. So CDA, we've been working on that from the get-go, partnering across agencies and with local communities in terms of how we get the resources that are needed out to the community. We've really been focused on recently on a model of community-centered outreach, so essentially leaning on community leaders who are trusted within their communities. You know, of course, within agriculture, we have people from all over the world, people whose first language is not English, people who are new to the state, and people who have been here for a long time. And so we want to lean on the members of those communities who are trusted, who can help disseminate information about what's going on with coronavirus, how you stay safe, how you go to work safely, how you protect yourself and your family. And we are supporting that. The state is supporting that as well, but really leaning on that local response. So I think it's kind of part of, you know, our ongoing ethos at CDA as well, that we don't necessarily know best as a state agency, but we are here to try and remove barriers and get resources to the people who do. And so that's just going to continue to remain a focus for us, and making sure that as we stay open and keep the supply chain, you know, food and ag supply chain moving and keep food on the table, that in order to do that, we have to keep people safe and healthy. So we're going to remain a partner in making sure we get what is needed out to the field.
How challenging is it for those ag employers out there because of COVID? Is there an ag labor shortage in the state? And if so, what's the Colorado Department of Agriculture doing to help those ag employers try to find the workers they need to get the agriculture and keep it essential and keep it going?
Well, you know, this year there's been a bit of whiplash with the ag workforce. You know, in the beginning of COVID, the federal State Department issued a policy that was going to cut H-2A visas potentially in half. That was a big deal. Went straight to the top of Secretary Perdue. He and the Department of Labor, you know, this was, I think, brought to their attention from all sides. And luckily for us, that was before, you know, the big season where we bring most of our workforce in. But that was, you know, more or less resolved. Of course, come April, if you're thinking about the Western Slope, folks were starting to, you know, bring in workers for in our fruit-growing regions, you know, Palisade, North Fork Valley, that area. And then they got slammed by that mid-April frost, 17 degrees in places, and then really had no work for folks, so had to send them home. That's had a ripple effect now because there's a lot fewer workers out there, but now you've got folks who, you know, actually do have a crop who are struggling to find some work. So as we move through harvest season, I know this is something that's been impacting folks differently in different parts of the state. You know, we're, of course, concerned about, again, especially folks who are moving around from season to season, making sure they're staying safe and also not facing, I'd say, you know, barriers on the policy side to getting to the work sites that they need to work on. So, you know, it's something we're monitoring. We're conscious of it. Of course, if there are concerns, always reach out to us at CDA. We've got our internal teams who are, you know, tracking, responding, and trying to resolve problems as quickly as possible. This one, of course, is bigger than just CDA. This is often a federal issue. It always has been, and it will continue to be. But we can, you know, do what we can to try and remove barriers that folks are facing.
Once again, my guest, Colorado Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg, speaking of the federal control on things and situation, we got this 900-pound gorilla in the room. That's the drought situation going on in this whole state. Back on August 7th, the USDA announced the emergency haying grazing of Conservation Reserve Program acres. Then they revised it on the 27th, and originally it was 54 counties. Now it's all but the city and county of Denver that's been opened up to emergency haying and grazing. But there is a situation that has arose since that time. Apparently, according to the contracts with the CRP, there's a clause in there that says before the first freeze, you have to remove the cattle or the livestock 30 days before the first freeze. Well, in essence, that means you have to remove cattle on September 15th and then have a 30-day rest period, Kate. And then you could put them back out for the remainder of the grazing period, which was 90 days in total, on October 15th. The rest period isn't going to happen at a very good time, especially when you talk about the drought situation, the wildfire situation to get some of this drier material, you know, grazed off, and then the wildfire situation in the mountains where people had to pull cattle off their permits and they have no place to take these cattle. Seems like this rest period is really going to come at the wrong time to really help livestock producers. Do you have any comments on that, and what can the CDA do to help maybe, I don't know if it's possible, but get that rest period waived?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, my general thoughts on this are, you know, we don't want bureaucracy to get in the way of getting things done, right? And this is such a tough, I mean, that just feels like kind of an understatement. It's a tough year, but it's kind of everywhere you look, there's another roadblock, another barrier, another challenge that producers are facing right now. I think you just described it real well, Brian, in terms of, you know, you look one way and there's a wildfire, so you got to move your cattle, right? Like we, you know, our team's been helping producers do that over on the Western Slope. But then, you know, where do you put them? And you open up the CRP land, and you've got a few days now between now and the 15th, and then you got to move them off, and then you move them back. And I think it kind of plays into this, you know, the sense of whiplash this year. You know, where is there stability? Where is there certainty? And it's really, we're not finding much. It's one thing when the markets give us uncertainty or when the weather gives us uncertainty. It's another thing when, you know, the bureaucracy gives us uncertainty. So it's certainly on my radar. I think what CDA, to your question of what CDA can do, I mean, again, it kind of goes back to us being an advocate, you know, helping remove barriers where we can by using our voice and our leverage wherever possible. You know, this is certainly an issue I will raise up the chain, especially knowing how urgent it is given the date and how many days there are between now and the 15th. So I appreciate you bringing that up, Brian, because it's just one more thing, one more uncertain thing that's stacked on top of everyone's plates that are just filled with uncertainty this year.
You bet. I know there's a lot of producers like myself that would like to help other livestock producers that are faced with this situation, and it just seems to be like, I'm not sure anything can be done, Kate. It'd just be nice if we could run up the flagpole and see if it can be saluted and removed, at least waived for this year, just because not just the drought situation, but the COVID situation too kind of adds to this whole problem that the livestock producers have faced this year. And maybe it has to take congressional action. Maybe Secretary Perdue can waive those 30 days because they waived the 25% reduction in payment and 25% set aside with the emergency declaration. Or maybe it takes an executive order from the president. I don't know. But it seems like something needs to be done quickly because there's going to be a problem with shipping cattle. And then the livestock producers are just going to incur more costs. And we're all trying to help them because of the livestock market situation. So, Kate, I understand you also have a big announcement regarding the drought task force. Tell me more about that.
So we are going to be announcing, probably here in the next couple of days, we're meeting with the task force today to talk through it, but we've got an interactive web page that we're managing that's going to be a place where people can share their stories. So it'll be, you know, written stories, audio, visual, multimedia. It's the way we're adapting this year. Like normally we'd be taking, you know, legislators out into the field. We still are going to do field visits like I started last week. And are continuing, you know, throughout the year. But we want people to be able to tell their stories and for those stories to influence policymakers who are going to be making decisions, you know, in the near and far term about, you know, how to respond to drought and other environmental impacts. So great opportunity for folks to just send in stories to us. We'll have a press release and obviously make sure you get that, Brian. This is a little sneak peek. But once that's live and announced, we'd love for anyone who's, you know, wrestling with the drought, dealing with the impact, dealing with CRP issues like we talked about, whatever it might be, to send their stories and help tell the story of 2020 drought to our state and federal leaders.
Sounds like a great idea, and you bet we'll share it just as soon as you guys get the information to us.
All right, sounds great.
I wanted to move on. The Colorado section of the Society for Range Management has announced a 5-part webinar series, which will take place this October, the 20th, the 22nd. There's two webinars, 27th, the 29th. And they're saying the sessions are free, but you got to get pre-registered. Give you more details about that in just a moment. But on the 22nd, during one of those two webinars on the movie night, I believe you're going to be part of that.
That's right, Brian. It's, you know, it's far away in 2020 terms, kind of taking a day at a time, but I'm looking forward to it. I was, I believe it was last or fall around the same time they had their conference in Denver, and was down there for that in person, you know, before COVID hit. So looking forward to being part of the virtual event this year. I think folks are getting real good at these virtual events, even if, you know, we're getting a little tired of staring at the screen, but glad that, you know, SRM and others are finding ways to, again, stay connected.
You bet. October 20th, it'll be a Rangeland Ranching webinar. The 22nd, it'll be Range Science and Research. And then the movie night that night, the Hannah Ranch, that features you. And then October 27th, online communities and resources. October 29th, the Colorado SRM's virtual business meeting. And if you're new to Zoom webinars, which I think people are pretty familiar with those, on the 20th, they're actually going to have a Zoom webinar info type deal. So you can get registered online for free. Go to cssrm.org/webinars, of course, sponsored by CSSRM, the Colorado State Land Board, the West Greeley Conservation District, Pawnee Butte Seeds, and it's going to be a pretty good opportunity, folks. You need to take advantage of it. And you're part of the movie night for the Hannah Ranch. You're going to be focusing on, and we've talked about this every month, I think, that we've had a chance to do these interviews, the Rural Mental Health Toolkit that's been put together by the Colorado Department of Agriculture. Anything you wanted to mention about that again?
Want people to remember that these resources are available. They're free, they're confidential, you can access them anytime, you can call or text and connect with a professional. You know, just to be honest, Brian, this year, you know, I consider myself pretty steady, and this year's been tough. You know, I think a lot of days I just keep my head down and say, you know, we just keep doing what we got to do, we just, you know, stay focused through the storm, and that's true, but sometimes it takes a toll, and it sneaks up on you. You know, it can sneak up on in strange ways and ways that you're not expecting, and that can be real hard. You know, it certainly sometimes makes me, you know, makes me doubt myself, makes me wonder if something's wrong, and makes me think about who I can reach out to who might have an inkling of understanding of what's going on, even when it feels chaotic. And not to say that I understand what others are going through, but can't imagine that everyone's feeling perfectly stable and happy these days, given all the changes. So, you know, as I say all the time, CDA wants people to know that that's okay. Like, you know, whatever you're going through, as we say, you don't have to go through it alone. That's why we want to make sure this program's getting out into the world. Our partnership with the Colorado Crisis Hotline has been remarkable. They've been so fantastic to work with, and they are a great resource for folks. Even if you just say, I just don't know what's going on with me. I just can't get my head right. I can't, you know, my days just, they feel a little less vibrant than before. I don't know what's going on. I'm stressed. I'm nervous. I'm angry. There are people who can hear you and support you in that, and you don't have to drive to a clinic. You don't have to, you know, pay for services, but there are people to give you that support. We want to make sure that, you know, folks are able to take advantage of that, lean on that support, whatever they're going through.
You are not alone. If you need to talk, reach out 24/7 for free confidential support. You can call 1-844-493-TALK. That's 1-844-493-8255, or simply text the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 38255. You can also visit their website. It's CobblerCrisisServices.org. I know we've covered a lot, and I really appreciate your time. You're very gracious in that. But any final thoughts before I let you go?
Well, wishing everyone continued good luck down at the State Fair, competitors and staff and volunteers alike. I think in general, being in agriculture has taught us so much about how to respond to a year like this. We see what comes, we tackle it, we use our resources, our community, we lean on each other, we get, you know, entrepreneurial with whatever's in our way. And you know, I know there's been a lot of that this year. I know folks are tired. It's been hot. It's been dry. It's been uncertain. And just know that CDA is here for you to lean on, that our community is here to lean on, and let's keep leaning on each other to make it through these times.
Those comments, once again, from Colorado Commissioner of Agriculture, Kate Greenberg. As I said earlier, I appreciate your time. You're very gracious, and the work that you do for Colorado's ag industry each and every day.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Of course, the mission of the Department of Agriculture is to strengthen and advance Colorado's agriculture, promote a safe, high-quality, and sustainable food supply, and protect consumers, the environment, and natural resources. The vision of the Department of Agriculture is that Colorado's agriculture be strong and vibrant, a key driver of the state's economy, and recognized worldwide for its safe, affordable, and abundant supply of high-quality food and agricultural products. If you'd like to learn more about the Colorado Department of Agriculture, you can give them a call at 303-869-9000 or visit the CDA online at colorado.gov/ag.